This episode of Alone is brought to you by the GoDaddy coupon code CJCSigler, P as in Paul, which gets you 30% off your entire order of new stuff. Lock up a domain, get web hosting, email hosting, e-commerce suites, SSL certificates, and more, and save 30% off of all of it in one cart with the code CJCSiglerP. Do you know anyone who makes websites for a living? Share this code with them so they can pass the savings on to their customers. Share it on coupon sites. Share it with anybody you like so that they can save money too. More great codes are available at scottsigler.com/GoDaddy. And now, on with our story.
Welcome to the serial audiobook Alone, an unabridged podcast of Book 3 of the Generations Trilogy. Written by Scott Sigler. Performed by A. Kovacs. This novel is available in print as an ebook or as a full-length unabridged audiobook. For links to Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or Audible, please visit scottsigler.com/alone.
Hello, junkies! Ooh, momentous occasion this week. I start in on GFL Book 6, Second Draft. We are one step closer to getting you the next installment in the saga of Quentin Barnes and Company. Also, at the same time, we are starting the Zoroastrian Guild, a new GFL novella that will be integral in tying together GFL books 6 and 7. And as I've told you before, the entire saga finishes up with book 7. Once I do book 7, you guys, which will probably be out in 2020-ish, somewhere in there, I will be done with the GFL for good. And it will all be in the rear view mirror. But for now, we're super excited to move into the second draft of book 6. We don't have a publication date, so don't get too fired up. But we do hope to have the book into the editing, layout, production cycle by the end of the year. Are you a Goodreads user? You can win one of 20 Earthcore paperbacks by entering our giveaway contest at scottsigler.com/contest. That's a redirect that will take you right over to the Goodreads site, and you can enter the contest from there. Do you already have a copy of Earthcore? Or have you already listened to it, don't want a paperback? Then send that link to a pal who would dig the book. Don't cost nothing to join up at Goodreads. They could possibly win a lovely paperback copy of Earthcore. The deadline to enter is April 11th, 2018, so act fast. That's scottsigler.com/contest to enter the Goodreads Earth Core giveaway. That being said, let's get back to Alone. Let me get you caught up on the story, and then we're going to go skin a octopi. Previously on Alone. In order to save her people, M has decided to make the ultimate sacrifice. She will give Matilda what Matilda has wanted for over 1,000 years. Is this finally the end for M. Savage? Or is this the end of Matilda Savage? Find out next on Alone, episode number 26.
I stand in a small dusty room with Xander Gaston and Teresa Spingate. She holds baby Kevin like the universe might come alive at any moment and try to rip him away from her. She ran to get the child, I think, because even if she doesn't accept reality yet, a part of her knows this will be the last time he sees me. There is no furniture in this room. It happened to be close to the room with the pedestals. I absently wonder what this space was once used for. I know what it is used for now, to say goodbye. I spoke with Matilda. Afterward, I gave everyone specific orders about what would happen next. Bishop didn't argue, even though it was easy to see this is killing him. Gaston threw a fit, insisted that I talk alone with him and Spin. I've never seen him act like this, so angry and frightened all at the same time. He all but dragged me here. He doesn't want to lose his friend. It's the only way, I say. If I don't do this, we don't get the control codes. The wasps will destroy us. Gaston burns with fury. If his rage could be channeled into a weapon, we could destroy all who stand against us. I won't allow it. He's speaking with the voice he uses in combat, the voice of the captain, the voice of a leader who won't be questioned.
Tell her, Teresa.
Spingate is crying. She isn't even bothering to hold it back. Tears line her face, each wet streak tracing where her nose meets her cheek, then flowing to the outside corners of her full lips.
You can't let Matilda overwrite you, she says. We've seen what happens. It will be the end of you.
I nod.
I know. There's no time for debate. It comes down to one person's life against the lives of 6,500.
Gaston and Spin are canvases painted in anguish. It hurts so much to see their pain. I wish there was something I could say to make them feel better. How strange. I'm the one sacrificing my life, yet I feel the need to console them.
I forbid it, Gaston says.
I put my hand on his shoulder. It's not your choice to make. It's mine. Spin shakes her head. Her lower lip quivers. Tears drip from her chin, land on little Kevin's nose. She wants to talk me out of it, but she knows me better than anyone ever has. She knows I won't waver from this decision.
God's damned bullshit!
Gaston's tears come now, sudden and intense, half strangling his words.
There's thousands of us, and only a handful of them. We have weapons. You said we had to conquer the grown-ups and take the ship, so let's do that, now.
I pull him close. I hold him tight. I love you, I say to him. Sobs shake his body. This man can command starships, can stand firm and orchestrate death on a grand scale. But here, he has no power.
Total bullshit,
he says.
I don't want you to go.
I pull away. His tears cool on my cheeks. Goodbye, Xander. You're a good man. My life is better for having known you. I move to Teresa. She's slowly shaking her head.
How did this happen?
She says.
If you want us to fight, Em, we will fight. You are my friend. I would rather die than let you go.
There is steel in Teresa Spingate. I have seen her face down horrors, both alien and human alike. I have seen her stand up for what is right while everyone around her screams at her to shut up, to cave in, to go along with the wrong decision because that's what the crowd wants. I know that if I asked, she would fight. She would kill. She would die. I hold her tight. I feel little Kevin between us, sleeping soundly. You are my friend, I say. You were the first person I saw. I love you more than words can say. You need to let me go. Let me do this. For you. For us. For Kevin. For everyone. I feel like someone is dragging a jagged blade across my heart. I fear the end. I will never see these people again. Spin reaches up with one hand, cups the back of my head. She pulls me closer.
We never asked for any of this, she whispers. Why can't they just leave us alone?
The they she refers to. Grown-ups? Springers? Wasps? All of the above, probably. I don't know, which is the truth. There is so much I don't know, and now I will never get the chance to learn. I grip Spin's shoulders, hold her firm as I step back. She's shaking. I lean in, kiss her forehead. Thank you for everything, I say. Who knows? Maybe I'll still be in here when it's done. My hope is a false one. We all know it.
Goodbye, Em.
Spin steps to Gaston, who is trying his hardest to stand up straight, to not collapse with heartbreak. She puts her arm around his shoulders. Together, they stand there, a family, father, mother, son. They represent the future of my kind. They are why I am doing this. I turn my back on my friends and head toward my fate. '56. We meet in the garden. Not an orchard, but rather the garden. It's just as overgrown as when we were last here. The same thick woods where Bella was taken. The same tangled brambles we crawled through to escape. The same sickly sweet smell of rotting fruit. The glowing ceiling arcing high above seems to have a few more black spots, but maybe that's just my imagination. This is where we fought the grown-ups. I could have killed Matilda then. I did not. I wanted to be a better person than her. That decision is about to cost me my life. She stands near the broken fountain that is nothing more than water burbling up through tall reeds. She's with three wrinkled, coal-black grown-ups. Old Gaston is one of them, a bit shorter than she is. I don't recognize the other two. Bulbous red eyes, whirling with a soft internal light. The nasty mouth folds, quivering slightly. All four grown-ups wear silver bracelets, white stones already flickering with power. Her people are armed. Mine are not. We weren't allowed to bring weapons. I have brought three people with me as well, all of whom can fight. Bishop, because there is no grown-up waiting for him. Young Victor, because his grown-up is on our side. And Barca, because as the leader of his people, he needs to understand what's happening. Bishop seems calm, a stone statue covered in skin, but I can see the turmoil in his soul. Victor is more outwardly upset, hands clench into fists, unclench, clench again. Two boys, both covered with dried mud, blood of different colors, both smelling of sweat and smoke and death. The rivalry between them is forgotten. Neither of them wants me to do this, yet both of them obey the orders I have given to not interfere. Barca seems to be taking it all in. I'm not sure what he's thinking. We walk towards Matilda and her people. The grown-ups level their bracelets at us.
"Far enough," Matilda says.
My friends and I stop. Elsifani tried rushing the grown-ups, and they died. Even Bishop has to see the futility of attacking them at this point. At least I hope he does.
"Let's not waste time talking," Matilda says. "We all know how this ends."
I can't help myself. I have to try one last time.
"You know I'm not lying about the God of Blood," I say. "You know we can't lie to each other. Omayokan isn't the paradise you were promised. It never was."
I can taste the hate pouring off of her.
"To think that I was such a coward," she says. "To think that I might quit at the first sign of danger. Are you a sad special snowflake because the God of Blood put obstacles in your path? If you want something, and you don't have to fight for it, darling dear, then it was never worth having in the first place."
I was wrong. She does believe me about the grub. She just doesn't care. Matilda is single-minded, a dauntless force of will.
"At least get the Zolotl out of here," I say. "Every second you wait is a second that brings us closer to a fight we can't win."
"You're telling me that as if I didn't already know. Tick-tock, darling dear. Time's a-wasting."
She is regal, triumphant. My heart sinks.
"You're horrible. How can you put your life above the lives of so many others?"
Her one eye swirls.
"Am I putting my life above so many others, or are you?" Every moment you waste is another moment that barbarian ship comes closer. And why is your non-life so important anyway? Hundreds of thousands of people dedicated their existence, their fortunes, their families to bring the human race to Omayokan. It was a struggle, but great struggle is the price of great achievements. I outlasted my enemies. I outlasted Brewer. I outlasted you. You have something I want, M. I have something you want. It's as simple as that.
Victor shakes a fist at her.
You selfish bitch! You're going to get us all killed!
Silence,
Bishop snaps, turning his head slightly towards the younger Circle Star.
Obey your orders!
Old Gaston glances at Matilda, just for a moment, his red eyes briefly betraying emotion. Is there animosity between them? If I had time, maybe I could exploit that. But time is something I don't have.
Children, please! Matilda says. Young man, you're hardly the first to call me by that name. But by all means, keep running your little mouths. Take as long as you'd like.
I stare at Matilda. She stares at me.
Tick-tock,
she says. We are impossibly different. We are exactly the same. Maybe something happened to her that made her this evil. Or maybe something happened to me to make me less so. We'll never know. To get what she wants, Matilda Savage is willing to let everyone she knows die. M. Savage is not. And that is why, in the end, she wins.
All right,
I say.
I'll do it.
Bishop breaks ranks, steps forward. Grown-up arms snap up, aim bracelets. I step between the weapons and my man, put a hand on his chest. He stops. His face is a mask of calculating savagery.
I'll kill her.
His voice is quiet, controlled, which makes it all the more terrifying.
I'll kill them all.
You promised me you wouldn't try and stop this. He looks past me to the grown-ups.
I lied,
he says.
I can't lose you. I won't.
Victor nods madly, a crazy grin splitting his face.
I'm with you, Bishop. Let's get them.
Barkha stamps a big foot down hard.
Stop,
he says.
Orders!
Just the one word, yet it seems to rattle Bishop and Victor both. The two are torn between their hardwired duty to obey their leader and a deep desire to protect me. I step past Bishop, stand before Victor. It's me or everyone, I say. If you want to protect your people, let me go. He tries to look into my eyes, but he can't. His head drops.
I'll go with you,
he says.
I said I would follow you anywhere. That includes following you into death itself. Please, let me.
I thought his feelings for me were just a crush. Yet one more thing I was wrong about, because I finally understand. Victor Mueller is truly in love with me.
Permission denied.
I stand on my tiptoes and kiss his cheek.
You are so brave, Victor. Be brave now. Our people need you.
I stand in front of Bishop. I reach up, put my right hand on his left shoulder. Inside, he's crumbling. He's shattering.
There has to be another way,
he says. The waver in his voice is almost enough to make me turn and rush the grown-ups. My throat is dry. It hurts to know I will leave him so broken-hearted. Ramses Bishop is a soldier. He would sacrifice anything for his people. He is a fighter, one who acts through violence, but this time his violence would solve nothing.
my decision, I say. I do this for all of us.
He looks down. He nods. He puts his right hand on my left shoulder.
Hail him. May the gods welcome you home.
I glance at Barca. We have been foes. We have been friends. In some ways, this alien understands me better than anyone else, Bishop and Spingate included. Barca knows exactly what is happening. He doesn't try to talk me out of it. He simply nods.
Hem. Peace.
He gets that this isn't just about me. He gets the bigger picture. The lives of his people depend on my actions. I throw my arms around Bishop's neck and kiss him one last time. A deep kiss. A real kiss. A kiss that I will take with me into oblivion. As soon as I let go of Bishop, Barca hops forward and hugs me. I hug him back, smell the strange odor of his skin, the stench of battle that clings to him still. I push away. I turn to face my killer.
I have one condition, I say.
Matilda laughs, a hateful sound that makes me want to tear out her other eye and blind her forever.
Now you have a condition? A tad late for that.
Just one demand, Matilda. If you don't meet it, you'll find out you're not the only savage who is willing to die to get what she wants.
For the first time, her aura of confidence wavers. There is the briefest moment where she examines me, trying to decide if my will is as strong as I say. But she knows it is, because my will is her will.
What's the condition?
When we're connected for the overwrite, before it begins, you give the navigation command codes to my Gaston.
Ridiculous, she says. You think I would give away my only bargaining chip?
I shrug. You don't have a choice. If you want this body, you give me your word. You're old, Matilda. You're frail. If you die in the process, I have to know my sacrifice is worth it. She stares at me.
Tick-tock, I say. Wouldn't it be a shame to get what you want only to have the dragon destroy us anyway? Tick-tock.
It feels good to throw those two words back in her face.
I accept your condition, she says. Let's go. We're wasting time.
She turns, gestures for me to walk with her. I take a step, then look back at Bishop one last time. I was never sure if I loved him completely, the way I loved O'Malley. Only now, when I realize I will never see Bishop again, do I realize I love him just as much. Maybe more. Why do I only discover my true feelings for people when it is too late to do anything about them? Farewell, my love, I say. I hope you find happiness. He says nothing. A single tear rolls down his cheek, cutting a wet line through dirt, smoke stains, and blood. Three steps take me to Matilda. Side by side, I let her lead me toward our fate. '57. Bars slide from ancient white fabric, lock around my waist, my ankles, and my wrists. My heart kicks. It's hard to breathe. For some reason, I expected the room where I die to be white, shiny, and clean. I was wrong. It's no different from the room in which I first awoke. Dingy, mostly dark due to the lights that probably burned out centuries ago. There's dust here. This place smells of mold and death. Matilda led me out of the garden, past the spot where I first fought her, where she lost her eye, where Bishop killed old Aramovsky. Through the darkness, the only light coming from thin lines of color embedded in the floor, through stone doors cracked and cratered by ancient explosions, past armored turrets with silver barrels that tracked our every step, through doors made of steel, not stone, and finally to this room, decorated with only two things, a golden coffin and a black X. The coffin gleams. The white fabric inside is rippled with age, even torn in a few places. This is where they overrode Bello. I don't have to be told this to know my friend ended here. Old Gaston and the others shackle Matilda to the X, locking down her wrists and ankles. They place the black crown on her head. This is how Kevin O'Malley died. I stabbed him, yes, but it's time to let that go. I had no way of knowing the boy I loved was still in there. It wasn't my fault. Finally, I accept that. I hope that I'm wrong about religion. I hope there's an afterlife. I hope Kevin is there, waiting for me. Golden coffin lids rise up on either side, slide shut, and block out all light. My life will end the same way it began, in darkness. I am about to be erased. My body will live on. Maybe some shred of my mind, too. O'Malley was still in there. Bello remembered things she couldn't possibly know. Perhaps a tiny piece of M will exist within Matilda. A part of me holds on to the hope that this will fail, but only a small part. I have no illusions. The person that I am will cease to exist. Of all the things that make me who I am, a friend, a killer, a leader, a manipulator, a lover, I am also a realist. And reality is what it is, whether we like it or not.
M? Can you hear me?
Matilda's voice. Even though it's pitch black in here, I shut my eyes tight. Do I really have to listen to her now? Do I have to hear the voice of that horrible bitch? There must be speakers in this coffin somewhere, hidden in the old white fabric.
I know you're listening, darling dear. Speak with me in your last moments.
Her words drip with smug satisfaction.
Go to hell. You disgust me.
How rude. We're the same person. You should be happy.
I want to jam my fingers into my ears, but my wrists are locked down. The coffin is old. These bars are new. I can't break them like I did when I first awoke. I want Matilda to shut up, just shut up. But I know she will not until the gas drags us both down to blackness. I should have killed you when I had the chance.
Yes, you should have. Compassion is for the weak. Because of your weakness, you end. Because of my strength, I live anew.
My eyes sting. What, now? For all the times I couldn't dredge up a single tear, I spend my last few moments crying?
You were spectacular, darling dear. So vicious. It's odd, but you made me proud. It seems fitting that the greatest foe I have ever faced is actually me.
If that smug, preening, selfish monstrosity is what I could have become, then maybe it's for the best that I end now.
Time to keep your promise. Release the navigation command codes.
She laughs.
Don't be silly, foolish girl. You knew I wouldn't give you the codes. Down in your infant heart, you wanted to join with me. Your pathetic little demand was just for show.
Rage consumes me, but it's hollow, there and gone in an instant.
I gambled. I lost. My existence will end to the bitter sound of her self-satisfied cackle.
Goodbye, Em. Gaston, I am ready. Begin the process.
Old Gaston's gravelly voice comes through the hidden speakers.
No, Matilda, you made a deal.
I stop breathing. I stare into the darkness. Matilda isn't laughing anymore.
Always the comedian, Admiral. Begin the process. Don't make me angry. You gave your word,
he says.
Since when does my word matter? We're at war.
Her voice cracks on the words. She's afraid.
It matters now,
old Gaston says.
I've listened to your lies for centuries, not anymore. Your selfishness has put my descendants at risk. Your descendants?
Matilda shrieks her words.
You mean the bastard child from that whorish version of Teresa and your receptacle? Those aren't your children, Gaston. I'll never have children of my own because I followed you. Give me the code. You god's damned backstabbing cockroach! Start the process or I'll have you skinned alive! You gave your word,
he says.
Honor it or suffer the slow demise of dying where you are.
He's calm, methodical, but he's also enjoying this.
Fine,
Matilda says. She rattles off a string of letters and numbers that is so long I lose track of them by the 10th or 11th digit.
One moment while I verify,
old Gaston says. The codes, if they're correct, will he release me? Maybe I won't end after all. My heart thunders with hope. I can't think. I dare not think at all. A few moments later, old Gaston says,
Codes confirmed.
Release me, please. We can fly away. We can escape. We can...
I'm sorry,
he says.
Matilda gave her word. So did you.
With that, I know it's over. He's right. I did give my word. I smell something. The gas.
Ah, it begins,
Matilda says.
You did well, Em. You did what needed to be done.
The creature I hate more than anything in the universe pays me a compliment. I should be repulsed. I'm not. She won and is gracious in victory. I chose this end, but I did it so that others would continue on. I only lived a single short year. But, like Brewer, I made a difference. So groggy. I don't know if my eyes are open or if I'm not able to open them at all. My constant anger, it's gone. I feel at peace. My existence mattered. As sleep claims me, I smile.
That was Alone episode number 26. Em gave herself up for the cause, you guys. She really did. But what will happen now? Will she merge with Matilda? If so, what happens to the old Em, the Em Savage that we've been following for three books now? What happens to the old Matilda? I don't know what to tell you. You're going to have to tune in and find out, because you will find out all of the above next week on Alone episode number 27. Until then, we will talk to y'all real soon.
You have been listening to Alone, Book 3 in the Generations Trilogy. Written by Scott Sigler. Performed by A. Kovacs. Produced by Scott Sigler and engineered by Steve Rickyberg. Follow Scott on Twitter and Instagram, where his handle is @ScottSigler, SCOTTSIGLER, one word, or join our Facebook group at facebook.com/Scott Sigler. Theme music is the song Unseen Horrors by Kevin MacLeod.